Listening Library presents Fallen in Love, a fallen novel in stories by Lauren Kate. Read for you by Justine Eyre. The life so brief, the art so long in the learning, the attempt so hard, the conquest so sharp, the fearful joy that ever slips away so quickly. By all this I mean love, which so sorely astounds my feeling with its wondrous operation, that when I think upon it, I scarce know whether I wake or sleep. Geoffrey Chaucer, The Parliament of Fowls. Translated by Gerard Nicastro. Love where you least expect it. The Valentine of Shelby and Miles. 1. Two for the road. Shelby and Miles were laughing when they stepped out of the announcer. Its dark tendrils clung to the brim of Miles's blue Dodgers baseball cap and Shelby's tangled ponytail as the two of them emerged. Even though Shelby's body felt as weary as if she'd done 4 back-to-back sessions of vinyasa yoga, at least she and Miles were back on solid, present tense, ground. Home. Finally. The air was cold, the sky gray but bright. Miles's shoulders towered in front of her, shielding her body from the brisk wind that sent ripples across the white t-shirt he'd been wearing since they'd left Luce's parents' backyard on Thanksgiving. Eons ago. "I'm serious," Shelby was saying. "Why is it so hard for you to believe that my first priority is lip balm?" She ran a finger across her lip and recoiled exaggeratedly. "They're like sandpaper." "You're crazy," Miles snorted, but his eyes followed Shelby's finger as she gingerly traced her lower lip. "Lip balm is what you missed inside the announcers?" "And my podcasts," Shelby said, crunching over a pile of dead gray leaves. "And my sun salutations on the beach." They had been leapfrogging through the announcers for so long, from the cell in the Bastille, where they'd met a wraith-like prisoner who wouldn't give his name, into and right back out of a bloody Chinese battlefield where they didn't recognize a soul, and, most recently, from Jerusalem, where they'd found Daniel at last, looking for Luce. Only Daniel wasn't entirely himself. He was joined, literally, with some ghostly past version of himself, and he hadn't been able to set himself free. Shelby couldn't stop thinking about Miles and Daniel fencing with the starshots, about the way Daniel's 2 bodies, past and present, had been wrenched apart after Miles drew the arrow down the angel's chest. Creepy things happened inside announcers. Shelby was glad to be done with them. Now, if they could just not get lost in these woods on their way back to their dorm. Shelby looked toward what she hoped was west, and started to lead Miles through the dreary, unfamiliar section of the forest. "Shoreline should be this way." The return home was bittersweet. She and Miles had entered the announcer with a mission. They'd jumped through in Luce's parents' backyard after Luce herself had disappeared. They'd gone after her to bring her home. As Miles said, announcers weren't to be pranced into lightly, but also just to make sure she was all right. Whatever Luce was to the angels and demons fighting over her, Shelby and Miles didn't care. To them, she was a friend. But on their hunt, they kept just missing her. It had driven Shelby nuts. They'd gone from one bizarre stop to the next, and still had seen no sign of Luce. She and Miles had bickered several times over which way to go and how to get there, and Shelby hated fighting with Miles. It was like arguing with a puppy. The truth was, neither of them really knew what they were doing. But in Jerusalem, there had been one good thing. The 3 of them, Shelby, Miles, and Daniel, had actually, for once, gotten along. Now, with Daniel's blessing, some might call it a command, Shelby and Miles were finally headed back home. Part of Shelby worried about abandoning Luce, but another part, the part that trusted Daniel, was eager to get back to where she was supposed to be. her proper era and place. It felt like they'd been traveling for a very long time, but who knew how time worked inside the announcers? Would they come back and find they'd been gone just seconds? Shelby had wondered, a bit nervously. Or would years have passed?
As soon as we get back to Shoreline, Miles said, I'm running straight into a long, hot shower.
Yeah, good call. Shelby grabbed a chunk of her thick, blonde ponytail and sniffed.
Wash this announcer funk out of my hair, if that's even possible.
You know what?
Miles leaned in, lowering his voice, even though there was no one else around. Weird that the announcer had planted them so far off the grounds of the school.
Maybe tonight we should sneak into the mess hall and snag some of those flaky biscuits.
The buttery ones? From the tube? Shelby's eyes widened. Another genius idea from Miles. The guy was good to have around.
Man, I've missed Shoreline. It's good to be...
They crossed beyond the line of trees. A meadow opened up before them. And then it hit Shelby. She wasn't seeing any of the familiar Shoreline buildings, because they weren't there. She and Miles were somewhere else. She paused and glanced at the hillside surrounding them. Snow sat on the boughs of trees that Shelby suddenly realized were definitely not California redwoods. And the slushy mud road ahead of them was no Pacific Coast Highway. It wound downward over the hillside for several miles toward a stunningly old-looking city protected by a massive black stone wall. It reminded her of one of those faded old tapestries where unicorns frolicked in front of medieval towns, which some ex-boyfriend of her mom had once dragged her to see at the Getty.
"I thought we were home," Shelby cried,
her voice landing somewhere between a bark and a whine. Where were they? She stopped, just short of the crude road, and looked around at the muddy desolation before her. There was no one around. Scary.
I thought we were, too.
Miles scratched his cap glumly.
I guess we're not quite back at Shoreline.
Not quite? Look at this excuse for a road. Look at that fortress thing down there.
She gasped.
And are those little moving dots knights? Unless we're in some kind of theme park, we're stuck in the freaking Middle Ages.
She covered her mouth.
We'd better not get the plague. Whose announcer did you open up in Jerusalem, anyway?
I don't know, I just...
We're never going to get home.
Yes, we are, Shell. I read about this, I think. We got backwards in time by leapfrogging through other angels' announcers, so maybe we have to get home that way, too.
Well, what are you waiting for? Open another one.
It's not like that.
Miles jerked his baseball cap lower over his eyes. Shelby could barely see his face.
I think we have to find one of the angels and just sort of borrow another shadow.
You make it sound like borrowing a sleeping bag for a camping trip.
Listen, if we find a shadow that casts across the century where we actually exist, we can make it home.
How do we do that?
Miles shook his head.
I thought I'd done it when we were with Daniel in Jerusalem.
I'm scared.
Shelby crossed her arms over her chest and shivered in the wind.
Just do something.
I can't just, especially not with you screaming at me.
Miles!
Shelby's body seized up. What was that rumbling sound behind them? Something was coming up the road.
What?
A horse-drawn cart creaked toward them. The clop of horses' hooves was growing louder. In a second, whoever was driving that cart would crest the hill and see them.
Hide!
Shelby screamed. The silhouette of a stout man holding the reins of two brown and white spotted horses rose into view on the sloping road. Shelby grabbed Miles by his collar. He'd been fussing nervously with his hat, and as she yanked him behind the wide trunk of an oak tree, the bright blue cap flew off his head. Shelby watched the cap, the cap that had been part of Miles's daily wardrobe for years, sail through the air like a blue jay. Then it plummeted downward into a wide, pale brown puddle of mud in the road.
"My hat," Miles whispered.
They were huddled very close together, their backs against the rough bark of the oak. Shelby glanced over at him and was amazed to see his face in its entirety. His eyes seemed magnified, his hair messy. He looked handsome, like a guy she'd never met before. Miles tugged on his hat hair, self-conscious. Shelby cleared her throat and her thoughts.
"We'll get it as soon as the cart goes by. Just stay out of sight until this dude is out of the way."
She could feel Miles's warm breath on her neck and the jut of his hip bone pushing against her side. How was Miles so skinny? The guy ate like a horse, but he was all meat and no potatoes. At least, that was what Shelby's mother would say if she ever met him. Which she never would, if Miles couldn't find an announcer that would take them back to the present. Miles fidgeted, straining to see his cap.
"Stay still," Shelby said. "This guy could be some sort of barbarian."
Miles held up a finger and tilted his head.
"Listen, he's singing."
A patch of snow crunched under Shelby's feet as she craned her neck around the tree to watch the cart approach. The driver was a ruddy-cheeked man with a dirty shirt collar, daggy trousers that were obviously handmade, and a colossal fur vest he wore cinched at the waist with a leather belt. His small blue felt cap looked like a ridiculous little polka dot in the center of his broad, bald forehead. His song had the jolly, raucous ring of a pub tune, and boy, was he belting it out. The clopping of his horse's hooves sounded almost like a drumming accompaniment to his loud, brassy voice.
"Riding to town to fetch a maid, a busty maid, a lusty maid. Riding to town to take a bride, an eventide, a valentine."
"Classy," Shelby rolled her eyes. But at least she recognized the man's accent, a clue. "So, I guess we're in jolly old England."
"And I guess it's Valentine's Day," Miles said.
"Thrilling. 24 hours of feeling especially single and pathetic, medieval style." She'd done jazz hands on that last bit for effect, but Miles was too busy watching the crude board cart drive by to notice. The horses were tacked in unmatched blue and white bridles and harnesses. Their ribs were showing. The man rode alone, sitting atop a rotting wooden bench at the head of the cart, which was about the size of a truck bed and covered with a sturdy white tarp. Shelby couldn't see what the man was hauling to town, but whatever it was heavy. The horses were sweating, despite the frigid weather, and the planks of wood at the cart's base strained and shuddered as it drove toward the walled city.
"We should follow him," Miles said.
"What for?"
Shelby's mouth twitched.
"Want to fetch yourself a busty, lusty maid?"
"I'd like to fetch someone we know, whose announcer we can use to get us home. Remember? Your lip balm?"
He parted her lips with his thumb. His touch left Shelby momentarily speechless.
"We'll have a better shot coming across one of the angels in town."
The cart's wheels groaned in and out of ruts in the muddy road, rocking the driver from side to side. Soon, he was close enough that Shelby could see the coarseness of his beard, which was as thick and black as his bearskin vest. His pitch faltered on the extended last syllable of Valentine, and he took a great gulp of air before beginning again. Then his song broke off abruptly.
"What's this?" he grunted.
Shelby could see that his hands were chapped and red from the cold, as they tugged roughly on the horse's reins to slow them. The rail-thin animals neighed, coming to a stop just short of Miles's bright blue baseball cap.
"No, no, no," Shelby muttered under her breath.
Miles's face had gone pale. The man shimmied fatly off the bench his boots landing in the thick mud. He walked toward Miles's hat, bent down with another grunt, and swooped it up in the blink of an eye. Shelby heard Miles swallow hard. A quick swipe against the man's already filthy trousers, and the cap was halfway clean. Without a word, he turned and mounted the cart's bench again, tucking the hat inside the tarp behind him. Shelby looked down at herself and her green hoodie. She tried to imagine this man's reaction if she were to pop out from behind a tree, wearing weird clothes from the future, and try to take back his prize. It was not a calming idea. In the time it had taken Shelby to chicken out, the man had tugged on the reins. The cart started rolling to town again, and his song entered its 12th off-key round. Another thing Shelby had screwed up.
"Oh, Miles, I'm sorry." "Now we definitely have to follow him," Miles said, a little desperate.
"Really?" Shelby asked. "It's just a hat." But then she looked at Miles. She still wasn't used to seeing his face. The cheeks Shelby used to think of as babyish seemed stronger, more angular, and his irises were speckled with a new intensity. She could tell by his crestfallen expression that it definitely wasn't just a hat to him. Whether it held special memories or was simply a good luck talisman, she didn't know. But she would do anything to get that look off his face.
"Okay," she blurted out. "Let's go get it."
Before Shelby knew what was happening, Miles had slipped his hand through hers. It felt strong and assured and a little impulsive, and then he tugged her toward the road.
"Come on!"
She resisted for an instant, but then her eyes accidentally locked with Miles's, and they were super crazy blue, and Shelby felt a wave of exhilaration kick in. Then they were running down a snow-dotted medieval road, moving past crop fields that were dead for the winter, covered in a sleek sheet of white that draped the trees and spotted the dirt road. They were heading toward a walled city with towering black spires and a narrow, moated entry. Hand in hand, pink-cheeked, chapped-lipped, laughing for no reason Shelby could ever have put into words, laughing so hard she nearly forgot what they were about to do. But then, when Miles called out,
"Jump!"
something snapped into place, and she did. For a moment, it almost felt like she was flying. A knotty log formed the back ledge of the cart, barely wide enough to balance on. Their feet skimmed it, landing there by sheer, graceless luck. For a moment. Then the cart hit a rut and rattled fiercely, and Miles's foot slipped, and Shelby lost her grip on the canvas tarp. Her fingers slipped, and her body flailed, and she and Miles were flung backward, sailing downward into the mud. Splash! Shelby grunted. Her ribcage throbbed. She wiped the cold mud from her eyes and spat out a mouthful of the dingy stuff. She looked up at the cart growing smaller in the distance. Miles's hat was gone.
"Are you okay?" she asked him.
He wiped his face with the hem of his t-shirt.
"Yeah. You?"
When she nodded, he grinned.
"Do Francesca's face if she found out where we were right now."
Miles's command sounded cheerful, but Shelby knew that inside he was gutted. Still, she would play along. Shelby loved to impersonate their stately shoreline teacher. She rolled out of the puddle, propped herself on her elbows, stuck out her chest, and pinched up her nose.
"And I suppose you're going to deny that you were purposely attempting to disgrace Shoreline's legacy? I'm absolutely loath to imagine what the Fancy Pants Board of Directors will say. And have I mentioned that I broke a nail on an announcer's edge trying to track you two down?"
Now, Frankie.
Miles helped Shelby up from the mud as he deepened his voice to do his best impersonation of Stephen, Francesca's slightly more relaxed demon husband.
"Let's not be too hard on the Nephilim. A single semester of scrubbing toilets really should teach them their lesson. After all, Their mistake began with noble intentions.
Noble intentions. Finding Luz. Shelby swallowed, feeling a somberness settle over her. They'd been a team, the three of them. Teams stuck together.
We didn't give up on her,
Miles said softly.
You heard what Daniel said. He is the only one who can find her.
You think he's found her yet?
I hope so. He said he would, but...
But what? Shelby asked. Miles paused. Luce was pretty mad when she left everyone in the backyard. I hope that whenever Daniel finds her, she forgives him.
Shelby stared at mud-slicked Miles, knowing how much he had, at one point, truly cared about Luz. Admittedly, Shelby hadn't ever felt that way about anyone. In fact, she was legendary for choosing the absolute worst guys to date.
Phil?
Come on. If she hadn't fallen for him, the outcasts wouldn't have tracked Luz down, and she wouldn't have had to jump through the announcer, and Miles and Shelby wouldn't be stuck here right now, covered in mud. But that wasn't the point. The point was, Shelby was amazed that Miles wasn't more bitter about seeing Luce in mega love with someone else. But he wasn't. That was Miles.
She'll forgive him, Shelby finally said. If someone loved me enough to dive through multiple millennia just to find me, I'd get over myself.
Oh, that's all it would take?
Miles elbowed her. On impulse, she swatted his stomach with the back of her hand. It was the way she and her mom teased each other, like best friends or something. But Shelby was usually a lot more reserved with people outside her nuclear family. Weird.
Hey, Miles interrupted her thoughts. Right now, you and I need to focus on getting to town, finding an angel who can help us, and making our way home.
And getting that hat in the meantime, Shelby added inside her head, as she and Miles broke into a jog, following the cart toward the city. The tavern stood about a mile outside the city walls, the lone establishment in a large field. It was a small wooden structure with a swinging sign of weathered wood, and big barrels of ale lined up against its walls. Shelby and Miles had jogged past hundreds of trees, stripped of their leaves by the cold, and melting patches of muddy snow on the parked, winding road to the city. There really wasn't all that much to see. In fact, they'd even lost sight of the cart after Shelby got a stitch in her side and had to slow down, but now, serendipitously, they spotted it parked outside the tavern.
That's our guy, Shelby said under her breath. He probably stopped in for a drink.
Sucker. We'll just snatch the hat back and be on our way.
Miles nodded, but as they slipped around the back of the cart, Shelby spotted the man in the fur vest inside the doorway, and her heart sank. She couldn't hear what he was saying, but he held Miles's hat in his hands and was showing it off to the innkeeper as proudly as if it were a rare gem.
Oh, Miles said, disappointed.
Then he straightened his shoulders.
You know what? I'll get another one. You can buy them everywhere in California.
Right.
Shelby swatted the canvas tarp of the man's wagon in frustration. The force of her blow sent a corner billowing up. For just a second, she caught a glimpse of a heap of boxes inside. She snaked her head under the tarp. Underneath, it was cold and a little fetid, crammed with odds and ends. There were wooden cages filled with sleeping speckled hens, heavy sacks of feed, a burlap bag of mismatched iron tools, and loads of wooden boxes. She tried the lid of one of the boxes, but it wouldn't budge.
What are you doing? Miles asked.
Shelby gave a crooked smile.
Having an idea.
Reaching for something that looked like a small crowbar in the sack of tools, she pried open the lid of the closest box.
That's a bingo.
Shelby,
if we're going into town, these clothes might make the wrong statement. She flicked the pocket of her green hoodie for effect. Don't you think? Back under the tarp, she found some simple garments, which looked faded and worn, probably outgrown by the driver's family back home. She tossed little gems out at Miles, who scrambled to catch everything. Soon, he held a long, pale green linen gown with bell sleeves and an embroidered golden strip running down its center, a pair of lemon-yellow stockings, and a bonnet that looked sort of like a nun's wimple made of taupe linen.
"But what are you going to wear?" Miles joked.
Shelby had to rummage through a half-dozen more boxes full of rags, bent nails, and smooth stones before she found anything that would work for Miles. Finally, she pulled out a simple blue robe made of stiff, coarse wool. It would keep him warm against this buffeting wind. It was long enough to cover his Nikes, and for some reason, it occurred to Shelby that the color was perfect for his eyes. Shelby unzipped her green hoodie and slung it over the back of the cart. Goosebumps rose on her bare arms as she tugged the billowing dress over her jeans and tank top. Miles still looked reluctant.
"I feel weird stealing stuff that guy was probably taking into town to sell," he whispered.
"Karma, Miles. He stole your hat."
"No, he found my hat. What if he's got a family to support?"
Shelby whistled under her breath.
"You'd never make it a day on Skid Row, kid," she shrugged, "unless you had me there to look after you. Look, compromise. We'll repay something else to the Cosmos. My sweater."
She chucked the green hoodie into the box.
"Who knows? Maybe hoodies will be all the rage next season in the anatomy theaters, or whatever they do for fun around here."
Miles held the taupe bonnet above Shelby's head, but it wouldn't fit over her ponytail, so he tugged on the elastic band. Her blonde hair tumbled down her shoulders. Now she felt self-conscious. Her hair was a complete beast. She never wore it down. But Miles's eyes lit up as he placed the bonnet on her head.
"M'lady?"
He gallantly held out his hand.
"Might I have the pleasure of accompanying you into this fair city?"
If Luce had been here, back when all three of them were still just good friends, and things were a little less complicated, Shelby would have known just how to joke back. Luce would have put on her sweet, demure, damsel-in-distress voice and called Miles her knight in shining armor, or some crap like that, to which Shelby could have added something sarcastic, and then everyone would have burst out laughing, and the weird tension Shelby felt across her shoulders, the tightness in her chest, it would have gone away. Everything would have felt normal, whole. But it was just Shelby and Miles, together, alone. They turned to face the black stone walls around the city, which surrounded a high, central keep. Marigold-colored flags hung from iron poles in the tall, stone tower. The air smelled like coal and moldy hay. Music came from inside the walls. A lyre, maybe. Some soft-skinned drums. And somewhere in there, Shelby hoped, was an angel whose announcer could take the two of them back to the present, where they belonged. Miles was still holding out his hand, gazing at her, like he had no idea how deep blue his eyes were. She took a deep breath and slipped her palm inside his. He gave her hand a little squeeze, and the two of them strolled into town. 2. Bizarre Bazaar. Gone was the peaceful countryside. Instead, just outside the city gates, there was a great bustling, with makeshift tents set up along the green, which was more grayish-brown now in winter, on both sides of the road leading to the tall, black city walls. The tents were clearly part of a temporary setup, like a weekend-long festival or something. The happy chaos of the people milling around reminded Shelby a little of Bonnaroo, which she'd seen pictures of on the internet. She studied what people were wearing. Apparently the wimple look was in. She didn't think she and Miles stuck out too badly.
They joined the crowd passing through the gates and followed the flow of people, which seemed to move in only one direction, toward the market in the central square. Turrets rose before them, part of a grand castle near the far limits of the city walls. The square's cornerstone was a modest but attractive early Gothic church. Shelby recognized the spindly towers. A maze of narrow gray streets and alleys sliced off from the market square, which was crowded, chaotic, stinking, and vibrant. The kind of place where you went to find anything and anyone.
Linen, 2 bolts for 10p.
Candlesticks, 1 of a kind.
Barley beer, fresh barley beer.
Shelby and Miles had to leap out of the way to avoid the stocky friar pushing a cart with earthenware jugs of barley beer. They watched his broad, gray-robed back as he cut a path through the crowded market. Shelby started to follow him, just to get a little space. But a moment later, the smelly mass of chattering citizens filled the gap. It was nearly impossible to take a step without bumping into someone. There were so many people in the square, haggling, gossiping, swatting children's thieving hands away from the apples for sale, that no one paid attention to Miles and Shelby at all.
How are we ever going to find anyone we know in this cesspool?
Shelby held tight to Miles' hand as a 10th person stepped on her foot. This was worse than that Green Day concert in Oakland, where Shelby bruised 2 ribs in the mosh pit. Miles craned his neck.
I don't know. Maybe everyone knows everyone else.
He was taller than most of the citizens, so it wasn't as bad for him. He had fresh air and a clear sightline, but she was feeling a claustrophobic fit coming on. She felt the telltale flush creep across her cheeks. Frantically, she tugged at the high collar of her dress, hearing a few stitches snap.
How do people breathe in these things?
In through your nose, out through your mouth,
Miles instructed, demonstrating his own advice for a second, before the stench forced him to wrinkle his nose.
Look, there's a well over there. How about a drink?
We'll probably get cholera, Shelby muttered, but he was already moving away, pulling her behind him. They dipped under a sagging clothesline, damp with homespun clothes, stepped over a small parade of scraggly, clucking black roosters, and angled past a pair of red-headed brothers, peddling pears, before they ended up at the well. It was an archaic thing, a ring of stones around a hole, with a wooden tripod set up over the opening. A mossy bucket dangled from a primitive pulley. After a few seconds, Shelby could breathe again.
People drink from that thing?
Now she could see that, though the market took up most of the open square, it wasn't the only show in town. A group of medieval mannequins, robed in burlap, had been set up on one side of the well. Young boys practiced wielding wooden swords, tilting at the ancestors of crash test dummies, like knights in training. Wandering minstrels strolled the edges of the market, singing strangely pretty songs. Even the well was its own little destination. She saw now that there was a wooden crank to raise the bucket. A boy, in skin-tight buckskin leggings, had dipped a ladle of water from the bucket and was holding it out to a girl with enormous, wide-set eyes and a holly branch tucked behind her ear. She drained the ladle in a few thirsty gulps, gazing lovingly at the boy the whole time, oblivious to the water dripping down her chin and onto her beautiful cream gown. When she was finished, the boy passed the ladle to Miles with a wink. Shelby wasn't sure she liked what that wink insinuated, but she was too thirsty to make a scene.
"Here for the St. Valentine's Fair, are you?"
the girl asked Shelby, in a voice as placid as a lake.
We...
Indeed!
Miles jumped in, adopting a horrible fake British accent.
When do the celebrations commence?
He sounded ridiculous, but Shelby swallowed her laugh to avoid giving him away. She wasn't sure what would happen if they were found out, but she'd read of impalings, of torture devices like the wheel and the rack. Lip balm, Shelby. Stay positive. Hot cocoa and sun salutations and reality TV. Focus on that. They were going to get out of here. They had to. The boy draped an arm adoringly around the girl's waist.
Anon, tomorrow is a holiday.
The girl swept her hand across the marketplace.
But as you can see, most of the sweethearts have already arrived.
She touched Shelby's shoulder playfully.
Don't forget to drop your name in Cupid's hand before the sun sets.
Oh, right. You too, Shelby muttered awkwardly, like she always did when the people at the airport check-in counter told her to have a good trip. She bit the inside of her cheek as the girl and boy waved goodbye, arms still linked as they sauntered down the street. Miles gripped her arm.
Isn't that great? A Valentine's fair.
This, coming from a baseball-playing boy next door whom Shelby once watched eat 9 hot dogs in a single sitting. Since when did Miles get jazzed about a sappy Valentine's Day party? She was about to say something sarcastic when she saw that Miles looked, well, hopeful. Like he actually wanted to go. With her? For some reason, she didn't want to crush him.
Sure. Great.
Shelby shrugged nonchalantly.
Sounds like fun.
No. Miles shook his head. I meant, the fallen angels are bound to be there if they're going to be anywhere. That's where we'll find someone who will help us get home.
Oh. Shelby cleared her throat. Of course that was what he meant.
Yeah, good point.
What's wrong?
Miles dipped the ladle into the well and held the cool cup of water up to Shelby's lips. He stopped and wiped the edge clean with his sleeve, then held it out again. Shelby felt herself blushing for no reason, so she closed her eyes and drank deeply, hoping she wouldn't catch some sort of withering sickness and die. After she'd finished, she said,
Nothing.
Miles dipped the ladle again and drank a big gulp, his eyes scanning the crowd.
Look, he said, dropping the ladle back into the bucket.
He pointed behind Shelby to a raised platform at the edge of the market stalls, where 3 girls were huddled together, doubled over in fits of giggles. Between them was a tall pewter pot with a fluted rim. It looked old as dirt and pretty ugly, the kind of expensive artwork Francesca might have in her office at Shoreline.
That must be Cupid's urn, Miles said.
Oh, yes, obviously. Cupid's urn.
Shelby nodded sarcastically.
What the heck does that mean? Wouldn't Cupid have better taste?
It's a tradition carried over from the classical days of Rome, Miles said,
going into scholarly mode as usual. Traveling with him was like carrying around an encyclopedia.
Before Valentine's Day was Valentine's Day, he went on,
his voice tinged with excitement.
It was called Lupercalia.
Luper...
She waved a hand, working out a bad pun. Then she saw Miles's expression, so earnest and sincere. Registering her eyes on his face, he reached up instinctively to tug his baseball cap down over his eyes, his nervous habit. But his hands met on the air. He flinched, as if embarrassed, and tried to stuff his hand in his jeans pocket. But the coarse blue cloak covered his pants, so all he could do was cross his arms over his chest.
You miss it, don't you? Shelby asked.
What?
Your hat.
That old thing?
He shrugged too quickly.
Nah, haven't even thought about it.
He looked away, casting his eyes emptily around the square. Shelby put her hand on his arm.
What were you saying about Looper... you know...
His eyes flicked back to hers, dubious.
You really want to know? Does the Pope wear Prada?
Now he smiled.
Lupercalia was really just a pagan celebration of fertility and the coming of spring. All the eligible women in the town would write their names on strips of parchment and drop them into the urn, like that one over there.
when the bachelors drew from the urn, whoever's name they pulled out would be their sweetheart for the year.
That's barbaric, Shelby cried.
No way was some urn going to tell her who to go out with. She could make her own mistakes, thank you.
I think it's sweet.
Miles shrugged, looking away.
You do?
Shelby's head swiveled back to him.
I mean, I guess it could be cool. But this urn tradition comes before the festival had anything to do with St. Valentine, right?
Right, Miles said. Eventually the church got involved. They wanted to bring the pagan celebration under their control, so they attached a patron saint. They did that a lot with old holidays and traditions, like it wasn't a threat if they owned it.
Typical males.
Now, in his life, the real Valentine was known as a defender of romance. People who couldn't legally get married, soldiers, for instance, came to him from all over, and he'd perform the ceremony in secret.
Shelby shook her head.
How do you know all this stuff? Or rather, why?
Luce, Miles said, not meeting Shelby's eyes.
Oh.
Shelby felt like someone had just stuffed a stiff fist into her gut.
You learned about the history of Valentine's Day to impress Luce?
She kicked the dirt. I guess some girls dig nerds.
No, Shelby. I mean...
Miles gripped her shoulders and pivoted her to face the platform with the urn.
It's Luce, right over there.
Luce wore a light brown dress with a wide skirt. Her long black hair was braided into three thick plaits, held together with narrow white ribbons. Her skin looked paler than usual, with a frosty pink flush dotting her cheekbones. She was circling the urn in slow, meditative steps, standing apart from the other girls. In the chaos of the square, Luce seemed to be the only person who was alone. Her eyes had that soft, unfocused look they got when she was in the trance of her thoughts.
Shelby! Wait!
Shelby was already halfway across the square, almost running toward Luce, when Miles clasped a tight hand around her wrist. He pulled her to a stop, and she turned, ready to lay into him. Except his expression glowed with something Shelby couldn't decipher.
You know this is the Lucinda of the past. This girl is not our friend. She won't know you.
Shelby hadn't thought about that. She pretended she had. She turned and took another hard look at Lucinda. Her hair was dirty. Not greasy, but something beyond greasy. Really dirty. One thing Luce Price would never abide. Her clothes fit her strangely, from Shelby's modern standpoint, but Lucinda seemed comfortable in them. She seemed comfortable in everything, actually, which was also not very Luce Price. Shelby thought of Luce as chronically, though charmingly, maladjusted. It was one of the things she loved about Luce. But this girl? This girl seemed comfortable, even in the desperate sadness saturating every movement she made. As if she was as accustomed to feeling glum as she was to the sun rising every day. Didn't she have friends to cheer her up? Wasn't that what friends were for?
Miles, Shelby said, grasping his free wrist in her own hand and leaning close. I know we agreed to let Daniel find our Lucinda Price, but this girl is still the Lucinda we care about, or an earlier version of her. And the least we can do is cheer her up. Look how bummed she is. Look!
He bit his lip.
But everything we've learned about announcers says you shouldn't mess with...
Ah, there!
Shelby said in a sing-song, pulling Miles along until they arrived at Lucinda's side. She didn't know where the Southern Belle accent had come from, other than hearing present-day Luce's mom's drawl at Thanksgiving back in Georgia. And she had no idea what people here in this medieval British world would make of her sounding like a Georgia Deb, but it was too late now. A few feet behind her, Miles shook his head in horror.
It was an accident, Shelby told him with her eyes.
Lucinda hadn't even noticed. That was how lost in sadness she was.
Shelby had to step up right in front of her and wave a hand in her face.
Oh, Lucinda said, blinking at Shelby with no hint of recognition.
Good day.
It shouldn't have hurt Shelby's feelings, but it did.
Haven't we met before? Shelby stammered. I think my cousin from, Windsor knows an uncle on your father's side of the family. Or maybe it was the other way around.
I'm sorry, I don't believe so. Though perhaps...
You're Lucinda, right?
Lucinda started, and for a moment there was a familiar spark in her eyes.
Yes?
Shelby pressed a hand to her heart.
I'm Shelby. This is Miles.
Such unique names. You must have traveled from the north.
Sure, Shelby shrugged. Very, very far north. So, we've never been to ye olde Valentine's Fair here before. Are you dropping your name in the urn?
Me?
Lucinda swallowed, touching the hollow of her throat.
The idea that a stroke of chance could decide my heart's destiny does not appeal to me.
Spoken like a girl who's got herself a studly boyfriend.
Shelby nudged Lucinda, forgetting they were strangers, forgetting that her words might be coarse and her sarcasm foreign to Lucinda's medieval sensibilities.
I mean, is there a knight you fancy, lady?
I was in love, Lucinda said somberly.
Was, Shelby repeated. You mean are in love.
I was, but he's gone.
Daniel left you?
Miles was red in the face.
I mean, what was his name?
But Lucinda didn't seem to have heard.
We met in the rose garden of his lord's castle. I must admit that I was trespassing, but I had seen so many fine ladies come and go, and the gate was open, and the flowers so, so comely.
She clasped her hands to her heart and sighed with deep regret.
That first day, he mistook me for a girl of higher stature, of class. I had my best kirtle on, my hair woven with hawthorn flowers, as some ladies do. It did look fine, but I fear it was dishonest.
Oh, Lucinda, Shelby said. I'm sure you're a lady in his eyes.
Daniel is a knight. He must marry a fitting lady. My family, we are common. My father is a free man, but he grows grain, just as his father did.
She blinked, and a tear slid down her cheek.
I never even told my love my name.
If he loved you, and I'm sure he does, he'll know your true name, Miles said.
Lucinda shuddered as she took a breath.
Then, last week, as part of his knightly duty to the Lord, he came by my father's door to gather eggs for the Lord's Valentine feast. It was the anniversary of my christening. We were celebrating. To see my love's face when he saw me in our meagre home. I tried to stop him going, but he took his leave without a word. I've looked for him in all our secret places, the hollowed oak tree in the forest, the northern fringe of the rose garden at dusk. But I have not seen him since.
Shelby and Miles shared a look. Obviously, Daniel didn't care about what kind of family Lucinda came from. It was the anniversary, the fact that she was getting closer to the limits of her curse, that had spooked him. By now, Shelby was familiar with the way Daniel sometimes tried to pull away from Luce when he knew her death was near. He broke her heart to save her life. He was probably moping around somewhere, broken-hearted, too. It had to be that way. This girl, standing before Shelby, had to die, maybe 100 times before the lifetime when Shelby knew Luce, the lifetime when Luce got her first chance to break her curse. It wasn't fair. It wasn't fair that she had to die again and again, and had to go through pain like this at so many moments in between. More than anyone, Lucinda deserved to be happy. Shelby wanted to do something for Lucinda, even if it was something small, She glanced at Miles again. He raised one eyebrow in a way Shelby hoped meant, "Are you thinking what I'm thinking?" She nodded.
"This is only a big misunderstanding," Shelby said. "We know, Daniel."
"You do?" Lucinda looked surprised.
"Tell you what, you go to the fair tomorrow, and I'm sure Daniel will be there too, and you guys can just..."
Lucinda's lip quivered, and she buried her face in Shelby's shoulder as she began to weep.
"I could not bear to see him draw another's name from the urn."
"Lucinda," Miles said, so warmly that the girl's eyes cleared, and she looked at him in the intimate way Luce sometimes looked at him. It made Shelby strangely jealous. Shelby looked away as Miles asked,
"Do you believe that Daniel truly loves you?"
Lucinda nodded.
"And in your heart," Miles went on, "do you really believe that the connection you have with Daniel is so weak that your family's position might sever the bond?"
He does not have a choice. It is written in the Knight's Code. He must marry a..."
"Luce, don't you know that your love is stronger than some dumb code?"
Shelby blurted out. Lucinda raised an eyebrow.
"Come again?" she asked.
Miles shot Shelby a warning glance.
True love runs deeper and stronger than mere social niceties. If you love Daniel, then you must tell him how you feel."
"I feel odd."
Lucinda was flushed, holding a hand over her breast. She closed her eyes, and for a moment Shelby thought she was going to burn up right then and there. Shelby took a step back. But that wasn't how it worked, was it? Luce's curse had something to do with the way she and Daniel interacted, something his presence awakened in her.
"I want to believe that what you say is true. I do feel, suddenly, that our love is very strong."
"Strong enough that if we brought Daniel to you at the festival tomorrow," Shelby said, "you would go to him?"
Lucinda opened her eyes. They were wild and wide and brilliantly hazel.
"I would go. I would go anywhere in the world to be with him again."
3. His sword, his word.
"That was brilliant,"
Shelby cried, when Lucinda had gone and she and Miles were alone at the well. In the western sky, the sun's rays had turned pale. Most of the citizens were making their way home, carts and satchels heavy with provisions for the evening supper. Shelby hadn't eaten in a long time, but she hardly noticed the sense of roasting chicken and boiling potatoes in the air. She was running on the fumes of her excitement.
"You and I were completely on the same page back there. It was like I thought something, and you said it. Like a crazy rhythm we got into."
"I know."
Miles plunged the ladle into the bucket and took a long, slow drink of water. His freckles had come out in the sunlight. Shelby was still getting used to how different he looked without his baseball cap.
"You were right. It felt good to make Luce feel better. Even if she's not our Luce."
For a second, Miles's head jerked to the left, as if he'd heard something. His body stiffened.
"What is it?" Shelby asked.
But then his shoulders slumped a little lower than their normal casual mode.
"Nothing. I thought I saw an announcer, but it was nothing."
Shelby didn't want to think about announcers. She was too excited.
"You know what would be amazing?" she said,
sitting down on the edge of the well.
"We could go shopping for them both, get some lacy trinket for Luce, and tell her it's from Daniel. I could write some cute poem, 'Roses are red,' or whatever. Hey, that'd probably be new to these medieval rubes. And we could..."
"Shelby," Miles interrupted her, "what about getting home? We don't belong here, remember? We've already helped Lucinda by giving her hope to go to the Valentine's Fair.
but we can't really do much else to change the way her curse plays out.
We need to find an announcer.
Well, you know wherever Luce is, the rest of them are bound to be nearby, Shelby said quickly. If we could just find Daniel, it would be, like, two birds, one stone. He'd go to the fair, we'd find our way back to Shoreline.
I don't know if it would be that easy to get Daniel to that fair.
Then we can't go home. Not until we make good on our promise to Luce. I don't want to be one more person who lets her down.
Shelby felt suddenly deflated.
She deserves better.
Miles slowly exhaled. He paced around the well, brow furrowed, his thinking face.